Today is Sunday, January 1st, 2023. And on Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin, I can tell you, I heard music till 3:30 a.m. Evidently, it was a New Year's party, and Chilul Kvod Shemayim, and all the elderly people who have to sleep. Wow. But Baruch Hashem, we managed. I want to dedicate this year today in memory of Reb Chaim Drukman. A lot has been said about him, and I only want to add one point that no one has mentioned publicly. I've mentioned it to people privately, but no one has mentioned it publicly. It has not appeared in any of the writings of all the eulogies in the Alonim. And I just want to mention, when he was Shlich B'nai Akiva to America, Rav Chaim Drukman would come to the Rav Sheyurim and sit there. One of the Talmidim, I can just see in front of me where he was sitting, and he was an oddball, because Asher, none of us had beards. And Rav Chaim Drukman had a beard, and he was sitting there and learning with us, learning with the Rav. The Altz is given in Yiddish, but evidently he knew Yiddish, and I knew him as Shlich B'nai Akiva, and my brother knew him very well, because my brother was quite active then. By 57, I already was into learning full-time, around the clock. I was a Talmud of the Rav already, but we knew him very well, and I can only tell you, he was a tzaddik yesod olam. And I need not elaborate, all the alonim and all the newspapers and all the talk shows. And I heard on the radio, driving home from Gris on Friday, they were discussing Chaim Drukman's support of Menachem Alon at first, and how could he make a mistake. And on the radio, I don't know, I can't go into detail now, but it works that they have two people every hour, one religious, one not, one right-wing, one left-wing, and they discuss topics. So the left-winger says, I don't understand the question. We all make mistakes. So he made a mistake. He supported him. I liked that answer. My wife liked it as well. We spoke about it on Shabbat. But the truth is that it's hard for a Rebbe to believe that he has a student who does wrong. And, you know, Reb Menachem Alon, Mati Alon, his father was Menachem, I knew all of them. I was at Benny Zichron Alvarez's wedding, I knew Mati, I knew the father, and it's hard to believe that your student has gone off the path like that. But later he realized that that was the situation. What's interesting is at the funeral, they gave an order that only Ramim from Haret, from his yeshiva in the, what's it called? I said Haret, Haretzion, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but only from his yeshiva they should carry the stretcher, the coffin, as you would say in English. The bier, I think, would be the correct word, because there's no coffin. And Mati Alon ran forward and also carried, and it caused the discussion. All right, it's sad, but it's nothing to do with the Chaim Drukman's greatness. It's hard for Oretzion, I think it's called. And Yehei Zichro Baruch, he was one of a kind. Zeichet Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Secondly, I want to mention, and important for my brother as well, there's no class next Sunday. You wonder why there's no class next Sunday. I had another great-grandson on Shabbat. So, Henna, thank you. It's Baruch Hashem, between my brothers and myself, or I was my mother's yard site Friday, and I made a see him in Old Rithka. I always make two siyum a year, one on my mother's yard site and one at her Pesach for the minyan I daven with. And I mentioned my mother made one decision back in 42-43 to transfer her eldest son, Arnold Edward Rothkopf, yours truly, from public school to Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Salanta, what you would call a day school today. the only such day school in the Bronx with over 700,000 Jews. And out of that decision, as they say, the rest is history. Now, Mark, you have to ask a question. If the baby was born on Shabbos, why is the Brit on Sunday? Vic, it was a cesarean. It was a C-section. And I tell you, it's the first time in my life I ever had that question. I never, ever encountered it before. I did a little research a little more today, but my grandson already called me and said, the Mol said, Yerushalayim, in Israel, they don't do that. It's a Suffolk Isidiyaraita. That's what it amounts to. Some Achloikis in the Gemara, the Lumdus is very simple. 8 days after the baby is born, the Torah uses the Lashon Yilud. And this is not a Yilud, it's a C-section. And I saw the OU guidance that if the baby is helped out of through the vagina with instruments, that's a regular birth. But a C-section is not. So as a machlekes ha-poskim, but a Suffolk Isidiyaraita, we go l'chumra. So I apologize, but next Sunday morning, Bezrat Hashem, I'm at the brit of a great-grandson, and I don't want to tell you how many, but Kanayin Hara, and I tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, the more the better. It's our nekama from Hitler, and our nekama from the progressive world that wants to turn us back to idol worship. Okay. Now, let me just handle some of the some slight corrections, emails. Jack Levenstein asked me to read the following. I apologize to everyone because I never knew my shurim is so important, but Jack says he goes back and listens to some of the shurim from 30 plus years ago. He would like me to repeat some of them. I have what to teach. Maybe when I hit 130, I'll have to repeat some shiurim. But until then, I have what I must teach. Anyway, he refers to his shiur on October 28, 1990. The title was that it was the 26th shiur Rabbi Soloveitchik that year, or in the years that I was 22 years, I spoke on the Rav. And I was dealing with why in Lithuania, and it's no secret, the married women did not cover their hair in public. And I explained it in great detail, and Jack says I should repeat it for me. I don't have time now. But I did hit upon that topic a number of times. And Mark, I can tell you, as a result of my hitting upon the topic, I was quoting the Sefer Mitzvahs of Rav Horowitz from New Haven. 100 years ago, the Rav held him to be bigger than Rav Meishi, you should know. And I cited from his Sefer, he has a long analysis, being Melamed Zchut on Nishei Yisrael. So as a result of my citing from the Sefer, it was reprinted, and the family sent me a copy. Baruch Hashem, over and over when I listen to your shurim from decades ago, I come across wonderful things that you said. As far as I can remember, you did not repeat them again. You should tell your virtual students that I feel it is very good to listen to shurim from the past. They will not be disappointed. It is fascinating what is in those she'urim. All right, Jack, I thank you for your kind words. I modestly apologize for reading a letter of such praise. As you know, I have emails that are second to none, but it's not for publication. Now, some of the topics that we've discussed over the last decade, and Rabbi Grunstein sent me Hallel on Rosh Hashanah with music. And I have to tell you, on Rosh Chodesh with music. I saw it first in Yeshiva University at a minyan from the Jewish Studies program for Balei Tshuva, a lot of Chabadnikim there, Breslova, and there were one of Rabbi Willick's sons running it, and they reach Hallel, and he takes the guitar. And I was there with a Talmud of mine who'll be here tomorrow, Dr. Charlie Hexter. And Charlie and I are looking at each other, and right in the bookshelf looking at us is the Chatam Sofer, who offset any music, you know, fighting the reform. So I have to tell you, Over the years, I've come to be very acceptive of this. And there's a beautiful article that some of the Yeshivat Chesder, they have it on Rish Chodesh. You see, if it inspires the youngsters, Adarabba v'Adarabba. Aye, the Chatam Sofer Asid, but he was fighting Reform Judaism. We're not fighting Reform today. We're trying to save as many youngsters as possible from assimilation. And today, I appreciate that article, and I agree with Rabbi Grunstein, Adarabba v'Adarabba. I also had the Shaila right here in the Kollel, a Talmud involved in outreach, told me he was at this camp, and they would with musical instruments and singing and dancing, and then they would reach Mizmish Sheli Omash, Adkan, now Shabbat begins. So I tell you, my first reaction was negative, but the more I thought about it, I think it's beautiful. In other words, you show Ben Kodesh Lechol. All right. A correction, I got many corrections on it. I mentioned that Simon Tov and Mazel Tov was introduced at the present Belzer Rebbe's wedding in 1966. We have here a musician par excellence, my dear Talmud Vic Snow. He and many others told me it existed before this Belzer Rebbe's wedding. They introduced a special niggun at his son's wedding, who will succeed him. It's his only son, otherwise he has daughters. And these are miracle children, because they were married a long time and didn't have children. And I stand corrected, but my memory is not bad. What I do remember evidently is that at the Belzer Rebbe's wedding in 66 to the Vishnitz's daughter, they did sing Simin Tov Mazel Tov. And at least in B'nai Akiva, we picked it up from that wedding in B'nai Brak. Another correction, I mentioned that there's a tshuva to Rabbi Yehuda Kuperman, and Rabbi Avadya does not mention his name. In Yabia Omer Chelik Zayim Siman Chafbed, I repeat, Yabia Omer, so Rabbi Avadya Yosef Chelik Zayim Siman Chafbed, here's the tshuva. And the tshuva I worked on, remember I told you originally Rabbi Kuperman gave me the Ktav Yad, and I worked on it and I taught it in Mechollah about accepting money from a Reformed temple. And here his name is absolutely mentioned. But my memory, I am positive, when it first appeared, the tshuva may have appeared in Moriah in the rabbinic journal, there his name was not mentioned. This remains in my mind. So it can be checked out. Okay, I thank Moshe Amiel for the correction. As far as electric shavers, I was right. They were Jacob Schick. He was not Jewish. He was Hungarian, a retired Jewish army colonel, applied for a patent in 1928, and he placed it on the market in 1931. And when I tell you, if he placed it on the market, probably in Hapades Rabbinic Journal, if you go back to the early 30s, you'll find the advertisements. I remember seeing with my own eyes many times the Schick razor. His life story is fascinating because he runs away from America to Canada, becomes a Canadian citizen. Why does he run away? It sounds like one of these Israeli stories. He was evidently, there was money that he didn't declare. And he went away to Canada to avoid the IRS. The IRS is very powerful. But to extradite someone on a financial crime, it has to be a big crime. Follow a guy, all right. But it's a fascinating story that he died a Canadian citizen. He was not an American citizen anymore. Finally, I just want to mention, this is something we've discussed many times, and I've published many pages on this topic, and a dear Talmud sent me from Yachom HaOtzer the latest issue, Tevet Tashpan Gilyon Ayin Gimel. Very fascinating correspondence between Chief Rabbi Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog and the Rosh Yeshiva of Nei Yisrael, Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman. And it's fascinating because I lived a case like this. What's the story? Rav Herzog turns to Rav Ruderman and wants him to investigate a case that has been brought before the chief rabbinate that a woman claims her original husband is refusing to give her a get, and evidently she's making some claims of mental illness, etc. And Rav Herzog asked Rav Ruderman to look into it. And he gets an answer from Rav Ruderman. He looked into it, and the woman has a get. It's not real, the whole story. But what is she trying to do? The woman had a get. She divorced the man. You got to remember back in, I don't know when this took place, in the 40s, divorce was not like today. Today, unfortunately, in the Torah world, divorce is quite popular. It shouldn't be, but it is. It's not for now. I have plenty to say on the topic, but leave it for, and I have said in the past. But divorce is popular. In those days, to get divorced, you got divorced, the man, mental problems, etc. Okay. Now she goes out again. No, shik mazel. Who does she fall in love with? Who falls in love with her? A kohen. The minute you have a kohen and a divorcee, you have a problem. So what is she trying to do? I understand very well. If she can get the rabbanim to declare that her husband had problems that she didn't know about when she got married, nu, give me the magic two little words, mekach ta'ut. It's a mekach, no, I can't speak that language anymore, Hashem. Mekach, let me try, mekach ta'us. You see what you go through? 53 years speaking Sephardic Hebrew and you forget everything you grew up on. Mekach ta'ut? Absolutely. No, Elliot, we had that very problem right here in BMT, without mentioning names, although it's well known. A BMT graduate, a Kohen, came from a brilliant father, a brilliant mother. Wherever there's brilliance, you have additional problems. You got, as I told you more than once, the two greatest compliments I got in my life, once in South Africa and once in Australia, and the farewell parties for me. Remember what I told you the chief rabbi said? I don't want to repeat it. We never, make believe it's someone else, not me, they said, we never met a man who knows more, and we never met a person who knows so much who was so normal. Okay? And that goes back to Lakewood. As an Amela, I will explain that to you in Yiddish, what it means. Lakewood, they said about Emilia as normal. I said, what does that mean? We're all normal. No, you don't understand. I was a kid of 16, 17. They explained to me. They were right. So this young man had a lot of trouble getting married. Finally, Hannah, he finds a girl. And she's a divorcee. Now, do you remember the case, Mark? And he's a Kohen. And they went and they looked at the video of the wedding. I was involved in this. I know Rabbi Vajdi with Rabbi Fabian Shov is a famous case. And finally, the Adam. This girl was a Bala Tshuva from Stern College, her first marriage. And The Adam, he brought her friend, the Shem Mitzvah. She brought her landlord, who she was renting an apartment from in Riverdale, and he's a Yiddish mensch, a survivor. She didn't ask many questions, and he was the other aide. It turned out he was a survivor, a Yiddish mensch, but he took a bus to shul on Shabbos. You follow? He didn't drive, but he took a bus. He used money. It's nicht given, I say, upgehit, not totally religious, traditional, we would say. And they turned to Rav Ovadia, and what went on, and they parceled out the original marriage that she didn't need to get, that the aid was a Mechallel Shabbos, the marriage didn't take place. If that's the case, she can marry my Talmud, he's a Kohen, but she was never really married. I share the sad part of the story is that the marriage didn't last. Later, he met a student of mine, and that one, Baruch Hashem, as far as I know, lasts until today. Rav Avadya, this marriage turned into such a cause celebre, this tshuva, that Rabbi Rava made up his mind after he would never deal with an American problem, because you never know all the facts. You know where you begin, but you don't know how you end. Okay, now I want to come back and I want to roll. We're in a very fascinating topic, although I will admit nothing compares to what will be tomorrow in this room. Not only we start the refutation of Satma, and Asher, I wouldn't miss the first part of the shir for you, it's manna from heaven. But I do want to say that tomorrow I'm revealing big, big secrets, the biggest secrets of my life. I'm telling the whole story. That will be at the end of shir. The formal shir will end 10:20, and the second part will begin at 10:20. I hope that we have then for Rabbi Bednar's show by 20 to 11, a quarter to 11, will be finished. But leave that for tomorrow. Okay, now, what is your name? You're visiting, or you're a voyager, or you're here?
I'm in Dress. I didn't know about the shir, so I just wanted to ask
that. Well, I've been teaching the shir since 1978, when Gris began. Who got this campus for Gris? Who got it? No? A guy named Aaron Rakefet. It's amazing. Maybe, you know what, I think tomorrow I reveal big secrets, the week afterwards I reveal the whole army, how I changed. I never get any publicity, you know, it's unbelievable. And the third week I'll tell the story with Chris, and this gentleman will not even believe it, because these stories, I can't believe it really happened, but it really happened. I can bring Edim Nemanim. Okay, let's get here. What's your first name?
Josh.
Okay. Josh. If you stay, I'll write your name and get to know it. But right now, Josh is sufficient. Okay. So we're dealing here with the whole question of plastic surgery. With the woman, there's no question. The looks are very important. I don't have to tell you, the Gemara in Taanit, Tu Bishvat. The dancing, we plead with the young man, don't look at beauty, look at the inner soul. Nevertheless, you see, when you plead with the young man, don't look at beauty, it means that beauty is important. And Reb Moshe's tshuva, what do you look for? Remember, I cited the tshuva so many times, what do you look for? And the first thing Reb Moshe says, you have to feel the physical attraction. So for the young lady, there's no question that plastic surgery should be mutter. The question here that haunts us, I would say, is, let me just put these notes back. This is coming. We're not there yet. Okay. The question here is, what about the doctors? Can you depend upon them? Can you believe them? And Reb Menashe Klein quotes the example of this lady who went in for a plastic surgery on her nose and comes out of it with a problem that will last the rest of her life. She has to take a pill a day. All right, and this leads us into the whole of that everything in life is a risk. When you go into a car and you drive, you don't know what you're going to find. I can tell you stories. In the block I live up in Berlin is one way. You have people coming down with bikes and motor scooters the opposite way. Where I live, I pull out of a parking lot. My building was built right after the Six-Day War. They introduced the law that every building built in Jerusalem has to have a parking lot, a parking space for every apartment. You pull out of the driveway, someone's coming in the wrong way. In a million years, you don't think of looking left, you're looking right, because the cars are coming this way. You never know what's going to happen, and yet we don't stop driving. Anyone who studies psychology knows that when someone is involved in an accident, the psychologist, first thing he'll try to do, continue driving. drive slowly, drive safely, but get back in there. Planes fly. I can tell you the story. It's an absolute true story. David Hartman. It's worth of a whole entire book on who Rabbi Dr. David Hartman was. And at one point in life, I was very close to him. And even later, in this very building, I argued with him. I actually lost my voice. He changed so much from the Hartman I knew. But Hartman was a very big exception in YU. He came from Lakewood. He had no bachelor's degree. And YU gave him smicha without a bachelor's degree. This was against all rules and regulations. In my time, Josh, if you didn't have a master's, you couldn't get smicha. You had to have a master's they acquired an MHO, Hebrew literature. Okay? David Hartman, they gave smicha. He was quite a brilliant young man and went into the rabbinate up in the Bronx beyond Fordham University. And Fordham University welcomed him, gave him, 96 credits for his smicha, yeshiva training, and we'll give you a bachelor's. And Hartman gets the bachelor's, and then they offer him a master's. And he calls the Rav. I heard the story from Dovi Hartman himself, so you don't have to doubt it. He calls the Rav. And he says, Rebbe, I got my bachelor's from Fordham University. They now want me to study for a master's. I don't know what to do. And the Rav says, Hartman, what is the problem? And so Dovi says, Rebbe, a master's theology, maybe I'll be misled. And Hartman says, the Rav says, Hartman, let me tell you something. Planes crash. But we still fly. You go for the masters. In other words, this is life. We hope you're not going to crash. But if someone, it can be very frightening. We had a fellow in BMT, a young man in BMT. His father was killed in that plane crash from Libya where they blew the plane up in, 1988? They just caught one of the bombers. Malka had a classmate in Ramaz. Family was flying, and the Elau was shot down over Bulgaria. Go back, it must be 57, 56, a long time ago, a classmate of my wife killed with, I don't know if both parents or her father, they were in the Elau plane that was shot down over Bulgaria. All right. So, halacha l'maisa, we're always going to take a chance in life, and we'll see that we have to live in a normal fashion. And if someone is trained to be a doctor, adarabba v'adarabba. And then the question comes up, not about women, but about men. And this is what we started last week. Mishnah Halacha Siman Resh Mem Zayin Chelik Dalid. And he has the exact question, what about a man? Can a man do plastic surgery? And the truth is, look at the Kohanim. The Kohanim, and we listed out, I gave you the source 2 weeks ago, of all the mumim in a Kohen that passes them out. A Kohen comes to you. I want to do the avoda. Let me do plastic surgery. Let me straighten out my nose. Logically speaking, adarabba, he should be able to do plastic surgery. And, all right, what about a man who's not a Kohen? I'm not pleased with my nose. I'm not pleased. There are freckles on my face. You can give many examples. Let me do plastic surgery. And here we come to the heart of the problem, and we'll come back to this again in a week or two. What is a man allowed to do? Lo tilbash simlat isha. A man not allowed to wear woman's clothes. Chazal interpreted, and Torah Shebaal Peh, I should say, the tradition, Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai, it's a lot more than just wearing women's clothes. A woman puts on makeup. A woman dyes her hair. A woman wants to look young. There's a Maimon Chazal that a woman standing on the edge of the grave is still dyeing her hair and putting on lipstick, paraphrasing the Gemara. I can tell you a very intelligent lady that I had the schut of knowing, I can mention her name, Mrs. Dina Dykman. Anyone know who I'm talking about? You know, the Holzer family, Manny Holzer's wife, Norma, is the daughter of Dina Dykman. They were the only two women, mother and daughter, who were both presidents of Amit Women, the Mizrahi Organization of Women. And Dina Dykman, there was longevity in the family. I actually had the privilege of knowing Dina's mother, who died at the age of 102. She was the daughter of a shamus in Brooklyn. He ran a shul. And what a family, what intelligence. And Dina told my wife and myself, she was in her 90s, she says, whenever I go to the hospital, I always put on makeup and a proper dress, look my best. Why? She says, if you look your age, they figure it's a lady in her 90s. We don't have to exert ourselves to help her. But when you see this lady, wow, presentable. And it's a tremendous insight on her part. And this is very true, and Chazal understood it. So there's nothing wrong in the world for a woman to put on makeup, to care the way she looks. I'll even use the word to be vain. Nothing wrong with it. This is part of the feminine mystique, which the progressive world would like to do away with. But I don't think they will ever succeed, because this is part of creation. This is a woman. It's not a man. Now, the question, what about a man? Okay. And here, this is the Gemara I quoted last week. We ended off the class, Nazir Daf Lametet Amid Aleph. You'll see, Mark sent me something that fits right into the way some of the Rishonim interpret the Gemara. What's the Gemara talking about? The way they're debating the issue of how the hairs grow. And the Gemara describes someone who dyed his hair, his beard, black. Where does the white hair start to come from? The face, the bottom. It shows that it's not the hair. You have a long hair, you have a beard. It's not the end of the beard that turns white. The start of the beard turns white. But what do you see from that Gemara? Men dyed their beards. Now, we'll come back to this too, but since I quoted the Gemara, I just want to mention that it could be the Gemara is talking about non-Jews. Non-Jews can do what they want, basically, in this area. I don't say there's total freedom of license. For instance, Yoma will say, so Rebbe, if non-Jews can dye their beards, why are we getting upset that the New York Times is in favor of two men marrying and two women marrying? Let non-Jews do what they want. I share you have one problem there. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, I met Jews in Australia. Shabbos day, after I finished, I spoke in there. They took me a tour of the various shul. We come to the shul, and we see people coming out with long beards. And the people accompanying me say, Rebbe, these people are not even Jewish. They're Sheva B'nai Noach, Sheva Mitzvah. And we met them, and they say, Good Shabbos, and we had a whole conversation, and we are non-Jewish followers of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, quote, end quote. And by the way, in Israel too, there's some Rabbonim who are active in this sense. Non-Jews, Sheva Mitzvot, part of the Sheva Mitzvot is proper sexual behavior. So that two men, two women, is just as forbidden for a non-Jew as it is for us as Jews. But dyeing the beard could be, it's non-Jews, therefore it's no proof to whether Jewish men are allowed. Or it could be the pshat is, it's just men in general. Who says it's non-Jews? Just these are older men, and they were dyeing their beards. And Mark, Josh, do you know Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener? He's sitting right here. When he was my student, he was plain Mark. Now I got to choke till I get his name out. Okay. So Mark sent me an advertisement where they're selling Touch of Gray just for men. You follow, evidently, this Touch of Gray is black and gray. You don't want to be entirely gray, but you don't want to fool the world and look like Josh. Josh is young. All right, he has a black beard. Yomo, I don't know how Yomo does it, because I know his age, and we don't see the gray yet. But Mark makes the point, they're selling these dyes just for men. One type, another type. So it shows you that it's become, to a certain degree, universal. If it's become universal, it may have halachic implications. Now, then Reb Menashe Klein quotes another source. I'll read the source to you. It's very fascinating. And this source may be the most basic source when it comes to the question of men and what they can do and plastic surgery. And it's from Shabbat, Daf Nun Amid Bet. And the Gemara, what the Gemara is talking about on Shabbat, Lamed Tet Melachot, you all know that. So one of the Lamed Tet Melachot, I'm quoting from the Rambam, Hilchot Shabbat, Perek Chaf Bet, Halacha Yud Gimel, Hanotel Shah Minof Adam Chayev Mishum Gozeis. That on Shabbat, if you pull a hair out, you know, I was just watching a movie last night. We had quite a Shabbat and quite a Motzoi Shabbat with the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren. So we finally got home. They took us home, and we get home. So my wife wants to watch something. So I found, someone recommended me to a movie, Crossing the Lancy Street. And anyone who grew up, in my period and remembers the East Side, we watched half the movie. I don't have that much time to watch movies, but we watched half of it. Maybe we'll fill in later this week, the other half. So in the movie, the granddaughter is cutting the hairs out of her grandmother, and the grandmother, she shouldn't look like a man, like a cosmetician. The granddaughter is doing the job. So is that permissible on Shabbos? No, it's gozeis. It's one of the Lamed Tet Melachot, and it's defined gozeis, shearing, severing, uprooting of any growing part of the body of any creature. Where does the melacha come from? Like all the Lamed Tet, the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, wool was needed for the covering of the Mishkan. So the Gemara is talking about certain depilatories, I think would be the proper word. Is a person allowed to use them? And you see they're talking in relation to Shabbat, but it's not just in relation to Shabbat. They want to look good. They want to look nice. So you see that men are involved in improving their looks. Omer Rav Sheshes, Bada Shari. The Rebbe says, my Bada. Omer Rav Yosef, Talita Ahala, Talita Asa, Talita Sigli. And what are they talking about? It's a depilatory that they would wash their face with this depilatory. It was made up of different components. And the question is, First of all, let me just give you the English words. I'm quoting from the Chapmanstein translation. One-third aloes, one-third myrtle, and one-third violets. I don't know if we have that today, but you have similar depilatories. Cosmeticians, it's a major industry today. And the whole question was, can you use them or can't you use them? And will it take hairs out for sure, segrece, or maybe a hair will fall out occasionally, but generally speaking, when you wash your face with this, no hairs will fall out. And they tell a story, Amema, Mazutra, Avashi were sitting together and they brought them this mixture on Shabbat. And the Gemara says, some of them used it, Amei Rav Ashi used it, Mazutra didn't use it. So they asked him, what's your opinion? You're worried about Shabbat? You think for sure it's going to uproot the hairs? You don't use it, but we do. We see it doesn't uproot the hairs. And he turns around and says, no, I don't want to use it because it's a problem of Simlat Isha. To look better, to improve my looks, to smooth my face, have a nice odor like powder. Sometimes you get into the elevator and a lady just walks out of the elevator and you come into it, you still smell that good powder. A lady, she wants to look good. Is a man allowed to do it? And he wouldn't use it. Worried about Simlat Isha. And the Gemara says, what's the machloket? In Bishvili Apotasar, and those who do use it. Why? Ki Hadetanya Rochets Adam Panav Yadova Raglaba Chalyom Bishvil Kono Mishum Shenema Kol Pa'al Hashem Lama'an No. And the Gemara quotes how they cleaned their bodies on Shabbos, otherwise it was tzar. It's not Simlat Isha. All depends on your attitude, on your feeling, why you're doing it. Yeah, very simple. You put on a clean shirt. Why are you not put on a clean shirt? Ladies, on Shabbat, I once asked a friend of mine, we both have the same families, only daughters. I raised my wife, I don't want to take any credit. My wife raised our daughters in Jerusalem, all right? They turned out very special. My friend raised his daughters in Lawrence. And they turned out very special. Two of them were my students. And I asked them, how did you succeed raising girls in Lawrence in the 70s, the 80s? And look how they turned out. He said, we had a rule. You cannot change your clothes on Shabbos. What you wear Friday night, you wear Shabbos morning. What you wear Shabbos morning, you wear Shabbos mincha. Malk and I were once at a bar mitzvah in Far Rockaway, when Far Rockaway, this is in the 60s, it's the Lawrence of today. And we had a simcha and Shabbos in a hotel, and we couldn't get over it. The ladies, Friday night, one dress. Shabbos lunch, another dress. Sudashli shit, another dress. So you see, it depends on your feelings, why you're doing it. And if you're polishing your face, upgrading your hands, I don't know, upgrading other parts of your body, and you're doing it liapech, to look good for a man, kiberir obishim latisha. A woman, this is part of the feminine mystique. I told you, I think I quoted JFK to you a week ago, or when we met last, 2 weeks ago, the motorcade in Dallas. By the way, I was in Dallas, I had students, I was scholar in residence, and they took me to a home museum where Oswald killed. You stand exactly where Oswald was upstairs in the book depository, and you look down, and right where he used the gun, and marked off on the street is where the car was at that moment, and they were waiting for Jacqueline. They were late. The president says, never late, they were late. And JFK said to the reporters, where's Jacqueline? He says, it takes the ladies a little longer, but they sure look better than we do when they're finished. And a woman, adarabba v'adarabba. Our greatest problem today, and a very famous lady will tell you 50 years ago when she was my student in Mechola, she says, Rebbe, do I love Gemara? And I told her, Chok v'lo yavo. Before you learn Gemara, you put lipstick on. And she wrote me a letter as she became more famous and more learned. Rebbe, I always put on lipstick before I learn Shas v'Paiskim. All right? But a man, so it depends upon your feelings. But what about if you're all right, Shabbat, I can't walk around like a slob. I put on a white shirt. If I ever wear a white shirt during the week, I remember my grandchildren, Mark, you got to drink something. My grandchildren, go get a... My grandchildren would say, Sabu, what are you wearing a white shirt for? It's not Shabbos, you understand? You have to, the Rebbe, when he first came to America, Yeshua, this you don't know, he wore a Bekesher on Shabbos. The Rambam, you have to change, it's based upon a Gemara on Shabbos. Your clothes, it has to be, if you wear short during the week, it has to be longer, a langer rekel of Shabbos, a longer jacket, a longer coat. He wore a Bekesher, all right, it disappeared by the end of the 30s. But your clothes, but why are you doing it? You're doing it to look good? Or you're doing it because liapod, a ben adam, a person, you're standing before God, yitzir kapal shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David. Why are you doing it? Now, it's a very important Gemara here, because the Gemara says that if you're doing all this, mishum tsa'aro, you're allowed. What does tsa'aro mean? Look into Tosfot. Tosfot, right there, Nun Amid Bet. It's a very important Tosfot. It's quoted lahalacha. Ein lo tsa'ache ele shemitbayesh lalechet bein b'nei adam shari. Da ein lecha tsa'yoteh gadol yuzeh. You see? If you're ashamed, you don't want to walk like this in front of people, your dress is not right, your hair is not combed properly, you have freckles on your face, pimples on your face, it bothers you, it troubles you. If this is the case, mishum sa'aro, there's no prohibition whatsoever. And this can be a very big determining factor in plastic surgery, even for a man. If you're doing it, look into Rashi here, Bishvil kono, lichvot kono, dechtiv ki betzelem elokim asat adam. The old, the haroe briot na'at, omer baruch shekach halo bi'olamo. Rashi, quoting the Gemara at the end of Brachat. But you see, the human factor plays a big role here. And this takes us to the whole psychology of Musa and teaching Torah. And, you know, one man's hot water bag is another man's passion. You can't set absolute set rules here. It's up to the individual. I came in Aliyah, it was like being reborn with different values. I wanted to fit in. I became an Israeli. As you understand, I've told the story more than once, my meeting with Rav Gorin in 1969, Havara Sfardit, part of the crowd. Today I'm offended when I see the government people, if you saw the picture in Friday's papers, they met with the president on Thursday, the government sworn in, and every last male has a red tie or a blue tie. And if Rakefet had his ways, no ties necessary, not wanted. We're Israelis, we're chalutzim. We have to put down physical matters, physical stress. But you see, they think they're big shots today. A tie, you gotta look nice. Some of them don't even know how to tie a tie. They need help there, but we're not. But you see, this is all part of the human gestalt. But there's no question that if Tzan, the way Tosfos describes it, then if a man wants to dye his hair, if a man wants to have his face, the blotches removed, adarabba v'adarabba. I remember some as 5 years ago, 4 years ago, my face would turn so red. So I went to a dermatologist. Dermatologist happens to be my student, and whenever many of the women I taught went on to become world famous in their professions. So the first thing I will ask a student, did I treat you properly when I was your Rebbe? Because boy, you sure don't want to go to someone who wants to get even with you for the way you treated them when you were the boss. And it's a very important lesson. That's Pshat, Hevi Noach L'Shocheret. Mark, you know that Maimon Chazal from Pirkei Avot? You know what the Pshat is? Be nice to the person with black hair. You are the big shot. You are the Rebbe. You are the doctor. You've accomplished. This guy's a youngster, has black hair. Idiot. Be nice to him, because one day he's going to be on top and you're going to be on the bottom. You understand? That's the Pshat. Don't, Asher, I have so much to say on that, but that's for now, just a little foreshadowing. And I have, oh, wow, don't get me started, let me get back here. So, yeah, there's no question that it bothered me. I was red, I'm speaking, I was young yet, I traveled to America, and in one trip I could speak to 5,000 people or more, and here my face is all red. So she mentioned, well, we have some medicine, it may work, may not work, but if not, you have to go to a plastic surgeon. And I, oy vey, I said, azay vaitnish, that far, no, you understand? No. It turned out that she attended a conference. At that conference, they said there's a new development. There was a certain pill they gave to old people who had all these facial problems, and occasionally someone died from it. Now they turned it into a salve, and the salve works. David, you got to believe in good doctors who go to conferences. She prescribed the medicine. Josh, do you know what Israel, you belong to a kupah. Not all medicines are on the kupah list. We'll come to that. In due course, you're going to see something amazing, but not yet. Now, originally, it wasn't on the coupon list. I had to go to Superfarm. They had to take it. I had to come back a week later. They had to call me and tell me it's ready. It had to be made to order. I had to pay 250 shekels for 50 gram. A year ago, they put it on the coupon list. The tube, 30 grams. So I need a little bit more, but it's all prescribed. You pay 15%, whatever, 14 shekel, 13 now. They lowered it down. Wow. But why? I want to look like a mensch. All right. Absolutely muta. Okay, so this is the Gemara that Rav Menashe Klein quotes, and it's a very powerful Gemara with very powerful implications. Mevuaf, this Gemara, the Hechi, the Itle Tzash, and it Bayesh Bivnei Adam, Ein Bo Mishum Lubash. Ulafiza Bemishe Yeshlo Ktamim, Nami, im it Bayesh Mipneze Bain Bnei Adam, Muta Lahaviran. If you're embarrassed, permissible. V'imeinu mitbayesh el osteh kedeh liapot atzmo. Oh boy. Then I'm not so happy if he does it. You understand? You want to look pretty. You want to look good. I don't know. That's not a male instinct. That's part of creation. But it's a feminine mystique. Not the male. And by the way, all the research in the world always comes back to this. I once saw BBC did a whole research, individual people, it must be 20, 30 years ago, but I found it fascinating. Men, the first thing you'll say to them, what do you think when you meet a woman? The way she looks. Am I attracted? When the last, the women, what do you think when you meet a man, when you go out with a man, you're trying to find a husband? The physical attraction plays some role, but very little. Much more important, is he decent? Does he have a profession? Will he make a living? Is he kind? Interesting. Is he kind? And I've given many lectures on this. You know, the famous Rakefet, the chocolate bar. I wrote about it in Washington. But more than that, I always say, I told my female students, when you go out, you're in a restaurant. Generally speaking, it's feminine waitresses, females. Look at the way your date treats the lady, the waitress. Very interesting. You can sometimes pick up on a man if he's arrogant, if he's humble. Just watch the way he treats the waitress. Then I remember I once caused trouble. I remember the parents came crying to me. He was actually a Talmud of mine, almost my age, but a Talmud. And once the girls asked me, how do you know that the boy is really religious? How do you know? I said, look, in a minute I'm going to quote the Mishnah Lachar. I said exactly what he says. Only God can tell who's religious. Look at all the scandals we have. I always say my life is an open book. I always talk about Rabbi Reuben Abramin, Zechet Tzadik Levar. We taught together in Mechwalar, and Abram, Ruby. There's never a word of scandal. We taught so many women. Who ever heard scandal? Have a wife, that's it. And Ruby, I never was that with the women. It's different than teaching a man. A man, you can pat him around the back, you can kiss him, get all excited, you see a Talmud. A woman, does that have to be a distance? Absolutely. But who knows who's from, who's not from? But there's no question, I said, you're on a date. All right, you have coffee, cake, whatever you have. Watch if he makes a bracha achrona. I said, benching is a big thing. It's a ceremony. Rabbi Gorelick used to yell, a ceremonial. You get hysterical at the modern Orthodox shuls where they turn Shabbos morning davening into a ceremonial. But watch if he makes a bracha achrona. That shows God consciousness. So I had a problem. I had one girl, one young lady, they took me seriously. And she dropped one boy after another because they didn't make bracha nachrona. Her father came to you, mother came to you. He said, Rebbe, he's never going to get married. Baruch Hashem, she finally married. And beautiful marriage, it worked out. And this is the way he ends off the tshuva. He says, look, he says, to me it's clear that in relation to a man, the whole question is why he is doing it. And only he can tell us, is it mitzarcho, like Tosfot, then you want to walk around like a mensch. There are people who don't mind. Look at the rocket shover. Whenever I see a picture of the rocket shover going, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, I always say, wow, he needs a haircut. Right or wrong? By the way, the rocket shover learned in Tomchei Tumimim in Lubavitch, which organized in 1897. We'll talk about that in a few weeks in the Monday class. Okay? But the rocket shover, he didn't mind. He was the rocket shover. If I would walk around like that, I don't know, I would feel awkward. I mean, I'm stuck with a clean-shaven face. I grew up that way. I grew up among Gedolei. The Rav, I'll never forget, and when Eric Zimmer asked him, Rebbe, can you shave in Chol HaMoed? He said, Zimmer, I'd like to know your practice. Do you shave every day? He says, yes. So what, Chol HaMoed you're an Aveilut? And he absolutely told him, you can shave Chol HaMoed. There's a lot of lumdis. I don't have to tell you. We go back in, to be Yehuda, and we got to see Pesach Frank, Martin Feinstein, Moshe Feinstein. I don't want to quote all the Chumit now. But you see, it's the individual. And that's the way Yenzos the Chuva. Ubochen Kloyot, v'lev yodea et kavanoto v'chulu. And that's what he's saying at the end. Only God will know whether you're doing it to emulate women and you want to look fancy, or if you're doing it l'shem shemayim because you see a kapava v'kadosh baruch hu and you have to walk around in a dignified fashion. So, all right, this is a fascinating tshuva, Reb Menashe Klein, on the whole question of plastic surgery. Yes, David.
So, Tachlis, if the man is embarrassed, then it's mutter to get plastic surgery.
Yeah, well,
if he's not embarrassed, then it's not mutter.
Let's put it this way. If it's nothing that causes discomfort, and you're just doing it to look better, etc., if you can convince me that you're doing it to find a shidduch, I would say it's mutter. If you're just doing it stam and velterein and you're wasting money and risking infection and pills later, I would say think twice. Okay, I was told the following. I got an email from a Talmud of mine who's been my Talmud since the Kollel began in 1978. So he never studied me in the classroom, but he picked up the shirm by tapes and then afterwards YU Torah. And he's a very important Talmud. I'm going to mention his name tomorrow when I reveal the biggest secret of my life and achievement. And I'll tell you why tomorrow I'm revealing it. So at this time, there's a reason why. The reason why my cover was blown. Okay. Excuse me?
It was blown by others.
Yeah, I'm saying it was blown by others, but if everyone's talking already, and thousands are talking, let me tell the real story, because I'm the only one who knows it from A to Z, and it involves a miracle in BMT and a miracle in the Kollel. And Jack, you always used to look at the guys coming to class and check them out. Only allow in tomorrow people who are Balei Emuna, and know what Hashkacha Pratit is about. If they're going to say, it's all chance, I don't want them here. I want believers. Hashkacha Pratit. I'm going to tell you a story that I can't even... Asher, do you make movies? Does Chabad... What I'm going to tell you tomorrow, turn it into a movie. It's worthy. It can rival any shtuyot that come out of Hollywood. A lot better, as a matter of fact. Okay, anyway... So one second, what were we talking about? He says to me that someone that we both know asked the Rav, my daughter wants to do an operation on her nose. Is it mutter? And the Rav said, no, it's not mutter, but don't you dare tell your daughter that it's not. So you understand what the Rav was saying. Yeah, all right, we have to live with reality. These are women. But this is halacha l'maisa, what the Rav was saying. It's not black and white. You have to have someone asked me, I got another letter, another email from South Africa, a dear Talmud for many years. And he agrees with me that I gave that talk that Chassidim always have a Rebbe. But a Litvak, you have a Rebbe once in your life. So I want to qualify this. There's so many people. A Rebbe Muvhak once in your life. What a Rebbe Muvhak is, again, there's a lot to say, but it's not for now. I did give a shirm on this 40 or 45 years ago in the Kollel, Rav Muvhak, the Rav. I have a lot of different Torah on it. Now, he asked me, but I need a Rebbe now. I'm in my mid-40s. And, you know, he's in South Africa. So I said, look, you have to find someone that you have confidence in who has a good reputation. It's the Talmud Chacham. But it's very important that he knows you, who you are, where you live, where you function. Because the more you learn Torah, and believe me, I haven't learned enough yet, but no one can accuse me of not trying to know Kol HaTorah Kula. But we got the Rav used to say, why do we sound, quoting Rebbe now, why do we use the words Talmud Chacham? Because if you think you're a Chacham, you're fooling yourself. You always have to be B'Bechinat, a Talmud, trying to become a Chacham. And the Rav said, I mean, time and again, in Sanhedrin, where you learned the qualifications for the Beit and Haggadah, you got to know everything? Who knows everything? But the rest of what it means is you have to know how to get knowledge. If you have a question, you have to know how, you have to look it up. You have to know where to go. You have to know where to find it. I remember Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik told me what was unique about Rav Chaim Moshe Grishinsky. We're going to talk about him in the Monday class down the line now. What was unique? He said, Rav Chaim Moshe, when he got a shaila, he knew where to go. He knew where to go, what to quote, what to look for. Hey, this is that. So, but you need a Rebbe that knows you, because when most shailas that we get are not the oraita, they're the rabbanon. And a lot is involved how you paskin. You're learning Yoredeya, Josh. You're learning Yoredeya today. What? Okay. So you know, there's Hepsid Meruba, there's Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontiv, there's Orchim. If a little kid, if Elliot, when he was 9 years old, would hear such concepts, he would say, "Come on, what's the halacha here? It's the whole shaila, the whole question." Do you teach the kids a Shulchan Aruch? You know how many times I discussed this with Reb Aaron, with Aaron Lichtenstein, with the Babe, as we knew him. I say it's not the same world without Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, all right? But you know, without the Rebbe, it's not the same world. What can we do? We have to go further. I spoke about that Friday morning at the Siyum. Yiftach Bedoro Geshmul Bedoro. And so, do you teach a kid a Shulchan Aruch? Vic, what's the problem with kids in Shulchan Aruch? Like everything, black and white, black and white. Halach is not black and white. There's a Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, right or wrong, the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avraham, the Chelkat Mecholkeh, the Beit Shmuel. Well, it's not black and white. But on the other hand, if you tell a kid you have choice and free, it's not good. Kid has to know there's a Mizgeret, all right. Then he gets older, he can color the picture with hues of coloration and configuration. And this is why it's so important. Shailas like this, I got to know who you are, where you're coming from, where you live, what is expected of you. Follow? Could be in Chabad, the bigger your beard is, the more they look up to you. Right or wrong? Could be. Where I come from, you see a guy with a big beard. I have a son's-in-law with big beard. And I said, what, are you sweeping the floor? What's going on here? Oh, you have to, okay. But this is Reb Menashe Klein. And I have to say, there's a certain humility in Reb Menashe Klein. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't take. You must. Only God knows what's in your heart. Okay. Me'inyan le'inyan ba'oto inyan. Yeah. This is a very important shiva that will open many questions and many vistas for us. Okay, one second. Let me just get out the first source. Josh, I have to explain to you, no one, from the day I came to Israel 53 years ago, I have never taught a text. When I was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU in New York, I taught like everyone else, Shas, Paiskim, you know, a text. When I came in Aliyah, I made a decision that I've come to Israel, I'm never going to make a living, and we didn't make a living. We had many hard financial years. It was a different Israel. Yom Kippur War, following the Yom Kippur War, that we're alive is a miracle. I mean, you got to know what we went through. So I have, every class I've ever given, I create the material. In the Kollel, it's ongoing. I have, could be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of pages of material. So that's what you see me doing, taking this out. And, okay, I want you to understand. All right. I'm now quoting from Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tet Zayin, Siman Kuf Yud. I repeat, Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tet Zayin, Siman Kuf Yud. Now, and here, we get involved with cosmetic surgery. Not that anyone is sick, not that there's any problem like suddenly your face turns white, your hair turns, your first turns, it has blotches, red. Oh, I looked very bad. I'm not downplaying. I remember in America I was during the summer when I was lecturing all over and helping perpetuate, I hope, Torah Hashem Tamima. So I remember I called in a student of mine who was a dermatologist there, and they really couldn't help me. And this medicine that Dr. Leona Fischer-Feld was introduced to turned out to be miraculous. A small miracle, but nevertheless, she looked at me on Thursday and said, wow. Okay. But what about if you're born with a birth defect? And, you know, you can have the attitude. I remember a big Talmud Chacham, I don't want to mention his name because he's on the Gris faculty. When he started having problems with his eyes and he needed cataract surgery, he said to me, God created me this way. Why am I going to have surgery? I said, I looked at him. I said, absolutely. In this tshuva, he's dealing with two different problems. It's totally clear how these problems integrate, but it seems he was asked the question, one, you're born with buck teeth. No, how many of you had orthodontia? I think all three of my daughters had orthodontia. Cost a fortune. Not cheap. But for a lady, you want to get married, want to meet a proper man, you go to go around with buck teeth. Tell me, what about a man? Can he do orthodontia? Is his father obligated to pay for it? Is it a necessity? We just said that the average woman looks at a man first, she's looking for decency, uprightness, kindness, humility, sensitivity, rigishut. I know my grandson, I got to figure out, next to the last grandson that I was Masada Kedushin for, so his wonderful wife said to me, she was impressed with his rigishut, his sensitivity. Why do I have teeth, space between them? Needs to be straightened out. Is the father obligated to pay? And that's one problem here. A second problem, a woman, tell me, a woman married, or even before marriage, they find that a gynecologist will say there's a problem. She's not built properly. She can't have children. I can give you a simple example, and this comes up in the halacha. I lectured on this extensively in the Kollel decades ago. In order to conceive a child, the sperm has to reach the egg. What if the woman's vagina is formed in a way that the sperm is going to be blocked from reaching the egg? Okay? Josh, you've seen this problem, you know what I'm talking about? This is the whole concept of AIH. Do you know what AIH is? Artificial insemination husband. What? Elliot, ask a simple question. If it's the husband's sperms, why do you need AIH? Let them just live together normally. But you want... he wants to impregnate her. If they live together normally, the sperms will not reach the eggs. That's AIH. Now, let's say the woman knows about this problem. Should she go through medical help, spend all the money needed to have an operation to straighten out the incorrectness of the way her body was formed in her mother's womb? And you can add more to the question. Why should she worry about it? She's not obligated on true or revue. The obligation is on the man. Vic, right or wrong, true or revue or militar, it's... the obligation is on the man, not on the woman. And this is axiomatic. By the way, a lot has been written, why is it on the man and not on the woman? And I think the simplest answer is part of ontological, the way God made the world. I can tell you my granddaughter-in-law who gave birth on Shabbos, she's had a very hard time. I give all the credit to the state of Israel. The second child was after a child born stillbirth. And the second child, and she had to be hospitalized. They wouldn't let her off the bed for weeks. Spent all that money and delivered, thank God, canine her. And now this child, now this woman, she's only a PhD from Hebrew U, doing research today in Weizmann. And when the first child was born, the eldest in the family, she held the baby and said to me, not even realizing what it's going to do for me, she said, Sabu, that's what my children call me, Sabu, grandchildren call me Sabu. This is my greatest achievement. I said, you don't know how happy you make me, because I live with this problem for over 50 years, from the day I started teaching women. Women are conquering the world. The progressives, what we have here in Israel, put them into a tank, put them into a plane. God have mercy if a woman is captured on her. Shem Yirachem. Don't have to elaborate. Here, the women, what can we do? Can we, halavai, my wife is very conservative. She would issue a law, no woman is allowed to work. You have to be home, children come home. My great-grandchildren, the age of 3 months, they're in school already. They're in a ma'on. 3 months, God, he punished a lot of birth here in Israel, they're very encouraging. They give you time off to give birth, to recover. But then you got to go back to work. All right. Mom, kids grow up. It's an amazing thing. And yet they know Yodash Shokanehu. They know who their mother is, know who their father is. Although, how much do they see them? And this lady said to me, my granddaughter-in-law, my greatest achievement. I said, you don't know how happy you made me. And at the little lechayim we had last night, four generations, we said, we all praised her. This lady is praiseworthy, brilliant. She's come from a brilliant family. Uncle is Zichron Avracha, graduate, PhD from Bernard Revel, very big in Bible. I can go on and on. Lawyers translated Menachem Elon, that's her grandfather, into English. But she didn't lose her feminine values. So, you see, it could very well be for a woman there's no need to charge her with a commandment, pour revu. It's part of her very existence, part of her very gestalt. Hannah, look how she prayed to God. Look at Sarah Imenu. Look at Rivka. Look at Rachel. Don't have to chime. A man? Oh boy. What are you dealing with a man? Conquers the world, makes a living. Ugh, Shem Yirachem. President of the United States. Look at our role models. JFK. Bumpar excellence. Robert Kennedy. Junior bum par excellence. Clinton. God have mercy. Some of the quotes that this man said that I will not quote in public. It's quote Hashem. You don't quote pornography in public. These are our role models. Who has to get married? Mark makes a cheshbon. How much money he spent on his wife, on his children. Who needs it? You marry a total stranger. Who is she? What do you know? Elliot, you become closer to that stranger than even your own parents. It's an open pasuk, no? Alten yazovish at the vivi imo, v'davak v'ishtol v'hayulav sarachat. All right, that's what Torah is about. So a man, we have to command. Don't be self-centered and don't be selfish. God put you in the world. You have a role. You have a must achieve certain goals. And only with a lady, with a woman, with a wife, can you become complete. So he deals with this too. Does the lady have to go through this procedure? Get herself in a position where she can conceive. And you see, it's not clear. When you look at the tshuva, the orthodontia and the lady giving birth merge into one. It's not totally clear. The person, the tshuva, is from 1997, and it's to someone named Malatu Kvodo Harab Rav Eliyakim Dvorkis. Dvorkis is a name I recognize from the Lithuanian yeshiva world, from the Musa movement. There was in the Slabodka, greatest Slabodka presence, there was a Dvorkis family, a big Rav, Musa. Maybe this is a descendant, because it's not a common name. Ashe, have you ever heard the name?
I have heard that name.
Dvorkis, D-W.
I have, I'm not sure from
But you're not sure from where. I went to school with a guy, in my class there was a Kalman Lowe. And Kalman Lowe's mother, they lived right near my grandparents on St. Lawrence, around the corner from St. Lawrence Avenue. And I remember I was a kid, and his mother, and these people, they sent their kids to yeshiva, and I, how from everyone already was assimilating. And I remember she once said to me, I still can see this lady in front of me, and it reminds me of crossing Delancey Street, the grandmother. And I can still see this lady saying to me, if you would know whom I descend from, my father, Rabbi Dvorkis. So I have a feeling this is the family. And this, too, he's writing the tshuva from. And let me just quote his Hebrew to you. It's, Acharei Drishat Shlomo Kvod Torato B'Yedidut U'B'Davar HaSheila Imuta V'Nitan Reshut L'Rofe L'Rapot L'Shanot Tzurat HaPanim L'Tova Mima shenolad ubara hakadosh baruch hu. V'kein b'chol shenivra kach b'tivo v'ein bo choli k'gamon isha shelo nechleta u'mevakeshet mecharofe sheyirapena v'titaber v'teled af she'ein zemachlat choli v'ke'ev. And this is the question. Are you allowed to change the way God created you? She was created, it's not that she's sick, it's not that she has pain. She can have relations with a man, the doctors will tell her everything will be normal and good. But you will never conceive because something within you in the womb is crooked, it's blocking. And this is the question, and I love the way he puts it. And this is the question that comes his way. Now, let me just end off. What's under the surface here is the whole question of the medical profession. What is the role of a doctor? Why do we need doctors? And here, Yoredeya, I'm quoting from Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya, Siman Shin Lamed Vav. And this is, every word I'm reading, sources from Chazal. Nata HaTorah Reshut L'Rofa L'Rapat U'Mitzvahi. Ubeklau pikuach nefesh hu. V'im monea atzmo harei ze shofech damim. And this is the basic concept. Why should someone be a doctor? A doctor can make mistakes. We spoke about this last time we met. But the world has to go forward. We all can make mistakes. Mark once helped his wife prepare challah for Shabbos, and he put in too much salt. Right or wrong, there are legendary stories of Gedolei Yisrael where they wouldn't come and the wife would look at the soup. I made for you a wonderful soup. The poor guy wanted to give it to a dog, but he didn't want to harm her feelings. He had a swallow with all the... We always make mistakes. This is part of life. But generally speaking, 99%, 98% of the time, we don't make mistakes. I always tell my wife, never get upset if I buy the wrong item. I had a friend, the Rav, he bought pizza for his grandchildren, and he bought the wrong pizza. And his wife yelled at him. The next day, he had a heart attack and was gone. I said, look at the way he exited the world. That a day before, his wife yells at him and goes, all right, you bought the wrong pizza, but don't get hysterical. It's only money. It's not the end of the world. So, you see, rapo yirapeh, the pasuk in Pashut Mishpatim, doctors have to work, doctors have to do, people have to act in a normal fashion. We're not perfect, we're not malachim, we have to do the best we can. And the Gemara, and then when the codification reaches the Shulchan Aruch, the words are very strong. Beklal pikuach nefeshu v'im moneya atzmo harei ze shofeich damim. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank everyone who honored me with their presence today. Secondly, we're touching upon now, we're starting something, you'll see what it leads to. It opens an entire world of thought, and ultimately it leads into the practice of a chassid, Lubavitch. When you have to do a operation, what do? They call the Rebbe. You remember when I was the Babitzer Rebbe, the Litvakin used to go to the Chazon Ish. Mark, I don't know how much did the Rebbe know about operations and heart, and yet the stories are legendary. The Chazon Ish, how much did he know? You understand? I don't believe he had an elementary school degree, let alone a high school degree, let alone a college degree, let alone a medical degree. And you're going to see, is this required? And wow, what we're going to come back to. And Reb Chaim Meisser, you saw me dancing with Reb Chaim Meisser Sefer the other day. You'll understand when we hit it. But I'm just scratching the surface. But nevertheless, it's not just the woman in here. You see, the man comes in with the whole question of orthodontia. So fascinating. So what did we do today? We're in the medley of Tshuva. They're all Me'inyan, Linyan, Be'otoinyan. But we finished out to a certain degree plastic surgery, the man, the woman, the difference. But we're continuing with a very specific Shaila, a woman who's an akara, not of any fault of the illness or pain, but the way her body was created. It's similar to a crooked nose. Remember we read the Rambam, all the different problems with the nose that are a mum for a kohen, are a mum for a lady or for a man, and mekach tolet, everything we spoke about. And here you have a crooked womb. It's something not perfect, but it results in akirut because it blocks the sperm. Okay. I once again want to mention that tomorrow we're picking up with the refutation. We're going to take a few weeks on it. By the time I'm finished, I challenge anyone in the world who's not a religious Zionist to prove me wrong. My thesis will ultimately be the only way to be a Torah Jew in the year 2024 is to be a religious Zionist, and I will prove it conclusively and deal with all the strictures of the Satmaruv. Many of them have filtered down to Flatbush and Lakewood and elsewhere in the Litvish world. Tomorrow's Shia Lubavitch will present me with a Medal of Honor, but there's no need to have the medal. It's black and white the way I think and what inspires me. At the end of the shiur tomorrow, it's going to be very, very different. I'm revealing secrets that I'm Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu that he has opened the mouth of Vayiftach Hashem et Pi HaTon and has told me to speak about it at this moment in time. Next Sunday, there is no class due to a very happy reason. I have the Brit of a great-grandson. As I explained to you, Yoshua, you're wondering, how do I know today that there's a Brit next Sunday? I knew already Saturday night, but it was a cesarean birth with all that that's involved. And it's the first time in my life, and I'm no youngster, that this Shaila came up into my hands. I never, ever had such a question before. It's interesting. First time, cesarean on Shabbos, all right. I have material. I'm told about Vada. It's Matir, but we don't go that way. But I have to look and see with my own eyes. Okay. No questions. Then I want to thank you all and doing me to get in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Yomo. Mark, can you open it to the world? We got to bring a pill to keep awake, but that's Yomo. I notice people are laughing on the screen, but that's Yomo. We understand it. Unmute. Yeah, unmute. Yes.
Okay.
Ask to unmute. Everyone understands. Are there any questions from around the world?
I just wanted to mention when the Rebbe spoke about the Ximatov Mazatov being a new Shita song in 1966. It reminded me that in September 66, I came from Seattle to Yeshiva as a freshman.
Wait, Rabbi Twesky, 1 second. Let me just tell the people here. This is Rabbi David Twesky speaking, who could be Tom the Rebbe of Philadelphia, but he chose instead.
So exactly related to the story, because in September there, I went to my grandfather, Tom the Rebbe in Philadelphia, for the first time, and I sat by him at the Shalosh Shuris, the Tish with the Hasidim. So the Hasidim was singing the traditional songs, Mizmor David, Nefesh, and my grandfather was mechabed me to sing a song. So I sang Siman Tov Mazel Tov. It was a new song I got on the Mark III, a new Jewish sound. So my grandfather put his arm around me and said to his Hasidim, "Mein David weist all the Amerikaner die Guden." Like I was singing,
he thought it was an American nigger. Now I got to translate that. His grandfather put his arm around him and said, "My David knows all the American nigger." Well, that's my story with Baron Cutler. I was in Lakewood. I'm not quoting anyone. I heard it. I saw it. Getzler Rosenblatt, Zeichet Zadik Levracha, it hurts. My whole world is gone. You have no idea how much it hurts. And he was the Baal Menachem. He later married a lady, a good friend of mine from Bnei Akiva, Thelma Glicksman from the Bronx. She should live and be well. And Getzo sang Shir HaMalot to Shir HaMalot B'Shuvat Shem. I apologize for my voice. If I were a lady, there'd be no Isha Kolisha, that's for sure. So, on top of old smoky, all covered with lots of rum, what's the wind? Snow. All right, so covered with snow. I lost my lover, something like that. Anyway, so Rav Aaron looks up and says, I'm tired of niggin. I want to hear it again. But all right, that leads us to the Shaila, if you're allowed to take Goyish niggin. It's a famous Bach. He was Mati, as long as it's not a church niggin. But in the Young Israels, I always say, Friday night, Christmas time, you would hear, silent night, whatever. I have grandsons that have beautiful voices, but they didn't get it from me. That much I can tell you. Balei tefillah and good voices, wow. But how do you sing silent night, holy night? But you see, that leads us, there was a whole thing in the Jerusalem Post, if you noticed, there was an article by Rabbi Tarragon of HaKotel, I believe. There are two Rabbi Tarragons, but I think this is the one of HaKotel. So he wrote that in America, you're caught up in Christmas willy-nilly, whether you like it or not. It's part of the culture, the Christmas tree, Santa Claus, all that goes on. So he was demoning it. And then there was a letter to the editor from some American living in Israel, says, "I'm also observing. But what's wrong? It's not a religious holiday anymore. The Christian theologians complained they took the CH out of Christmas. You follow? And it could be a melamed schud on the young Israel that silent night, holy night, all is, what's it, brilliant and bright, whatever the words are. It's not religious anymore. You follow? I'm being melamed schud. I don't know. But the Bach's tshuva, if your stump went into an inn and the Polish farmers were drunk and they were singing with a beautiful niggun, you can take that niggun and use it in the Beis Medrash. I remember in Lakewood, I suddenly heard a niggun. How does it go? Rad ha lai 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 lai. And I turned around and I said to one of the kanoim there at my time, that's a niggun from Bnei Akiva, rad ha lai la, etc., etc. My brother will remember better than I did, that much I'll tell you, the nigunim at least. And he looks at me, he says, because the Tzionistim Yimach Shmam robbed it from us, we shouldn't sing it. That was a Hasidic niggun, but many Hasidim became Zionists, many unfortunately non-religious Zionists, and they sang, they used the niggunim, just gave it different words. All right, it's an interesting question, and halacha lemaisa, it's... My question on young Israel and Adon Olam and Friday night, that question hangs fire. But I have to tell you, in my son-in-law's shul, my son-in-law lives near me, he runs a shul for many decades already, Chazon Yecheskel. And in Danny's shul, Havdil, Chanukah, Shabbos Chanukah, a gentleman, he's a lawyer, Rivlin. He's cousin to the president, Ruby Rivlin's cousin. And he has a chazakah every Shabbos Chanukah. He sings L'chadodi. And how does he sing L'chadodi? Each stanza to a different popular Israeli tune. You follow? It's unbelievable, and everyone looks forward to it all year. That's his chazakah. And it's really something, and the Israeli ones, the Sufganiyot, and all that gets involved, and oh wow, Yevonim, Nikbetzulai, I can't even emulate him, and it's all the words of L'chadodi. So whenever I'm there that Friday night, it reminds me of young Israel, Lahavdil, and what I heard in my youth in the Bronx. All right, are there any more questions? Okay, all right, I want to thank everyone for joining with me, and those of you staying up late, and as you can see, Mark Wiener gave up staying up to 1 a.m. in Chicago to hear the shiur, and he's sitting here in person. Tomorrow is Be'ezrat Hashem, 9 o'clock. Ani mekaveh lekaved uletiferet, and we'll meet again in health and happiness. Until then, das v'danya. Thank you. Baruch Hashem, and thank you for
recording
the shakaya. Okay. Now, you have your own car.
Yes, thank you. By the way, I just found out something interesting. There was a bar mitzvah in Rivka yesterday.
Yeah, there was a big crowd, the Chabad crowd.
Which you know who that is. It's my daughter-in-law's uncle.
Your daughter-in-law's
mother is in Ainsworth.
Aha. So
the boss is married to Ainsworth.
Who's married to Ainsworth?
The father of the grandfather of the boys, bar mitzvah brother. What? His wife is also in Ainsworth.
Aha, uh-huh. 1 second. And how does it come to old Rivka?
Apparently, I think he bought a building. He bought into a six-story building.
Okay.
I think the two top floors are theirs, And one of the bottom quotes is for the son, so you just have to hear the line.
One second, that's Goldberg?
Moss.
What's his name?
Moss is the last name.
Because I saw, when I went to Mincha, at now it's the 12:45, I've climbed up the steps from Berlin to Chalaf.
I remember those.
And I saw a big crowd of essentially Chabad walking from Old Rivka to Old Aron.
Correct, that's where they went to the party afterwards.
Okay. And I thought I saw Rabbi Goldberg there. He's the Chabadnik who first opened up on in the Great Synagogue. And I should have gone over, but I wanted to get to Old Rivka.
You would have been my son and daughter and all the grandchildren.
Wow. So I walked past, but, you know, compared to what they looked like, go and tell them this guy coming now has some
sweetheart.
They would look and say, can it be? But anyway, be it as it may, Ohel Aron is where I daven Mincha Maariv every day. There are reasons why. We resuscitated the minyan during Corona, and they were kind of, because that minyan ended 30 years ago when the Gabbai died and no one gave a hoot about it, and the Shtiblach was developing, pulling off people on the other side of Palmach, and Ohel Rivka has a big minyan. So we reestablished the minyan because we were all davening in the street. And for me, I was very ill with Corona. My sinisim, I'm back alive, kicking. I didn't want to daven on the street. It was cold, the winter. Oh, well, Aaron, they opened the door. You could sit inside and turn the heat on. So we resuscitated the minyan. So I go there. So like every good Jew, oh, Rivka every morning, 5:30. Oh, well, Aaron every day, Mincha Maariv time. Friday night, my son-in-law's shul, and during the summer clock, the shtiblach, unless we make an early minyan in Ohel Aron, I'm in the shtiblach, and Shabbos morning, that remained constant 53 years, Ohel Rivka 6:30 minyan. That's the greatest. I'm home by 8 o'clock, I'm making kiddush, and no one can bother me. My Gemara open. My Gemara actually, unfortunately, due to old age, I start learning on Shabbos 4:45, let's say. I forced myself to be a little later than during the week because of the Mordechai on Shabbos. You have to sleep a little later. I don't know, but at least during the week, I can tell you, I open my Svarim at 4 o'clock. But Shabbos 4:45. Baruch Hashem! One second, why am I talking? Let me give out gifts. If anyone is interested, these are the latest two issues of Hamayah. One of them I'm going to quote tomorrow in class. If anyone has intellectual curiosity, this is an excellent publication that combines the world of yeshiva learning with some academia, and it's a tribute to Shalavim. They put it out. If anyone is interested, this is the freebie on Sukkot. You can save it for next year when you shop in Rami Levi. It's not shopping in America. They give you free gifts. This has everything you want on Sukkot and Halacha Lemaisa, Ashkenazim and Sfardim, and Halacha and stories, a world of material. This was in the news this morning, Rabbi Mazuz. Made some comments on the lesbians and homos, and evidently someone recorded it, and they picked it up, and I hate to say that Aaron Rakefet agrees with every syllable he said, as quoted in the news, with the newscasters fuming at the mouth. You can pick it up on a rich shev, I'm sure it's already. Anyway, this is the halachic publication of Rabbi Mezuzah's Yeshiva, very fascinating, Svadik, Torah, Halacha Lemaisa. They sent me two copies. This is the latest, Kislev, Tashpag, and Tishrei of a year ago, if anyone's interested. Here is Rav Usher Weiss on lighting Hanukkah candles in shul. the old question, how are you allowed to make bracha? What does lighting Hanukkah candles have to do with the mitzvah of Hanukkah? It's Ishu Beitov, nothing to do with a shoe. He's terrific. Rabbi Shuai is terrific. And here, this is the Jewish action that I never laughed so much. M'chayei ha-meitim. What do I mean by that? When I started work on Rekha Farah and Chelik Aleph, Chelik Bet, so I had to make a decision which of my published articles would I put out, republish. And I picked what I thought was Kitvuni Ledorot, not something temporal. Lo and behold, 53 years after I wrote it, what every Oleh should know. This was an article I published in Jewish Life in 1970. I wrote it in 69. And I said, it's not important. And they took out of it what is still contemporary. And there you see that brave man in basic training. Elliot, do you recognize him?
I feel safer.
You feel safe, Baruch Hashem. Yours truly. Asher, you know why with the beard? It's very simple. In basic training, you have to shave every day. If you come in with a 30-day beard and you say you're religious, now you have, I think you have to bring a note from a rav, but then they took your word for it and you didn't have to shave every day. There I am. Wow, with a beard, the works. All right. If anyone wants it, it's yours for the taking. You pass it to Asher. Okay. Elliot is also a BMT graduate. Yeah, okay.
What year?